I'm going to begin with some thank yous. First, many thanks to Charles Wright for coming to Williamsburg from Charlottesville to read his poems tonight. Thank all of you for coming out on this warm spring-like night. And I feel obligated to thank our benefactor, Patrick Hayes, who has made our writer series possible for the last, 26, 27 years or so. For many of you, Charles Wright probably doesn't need an introduction. As you know, he's been living in Virginia for a long time. You probably have met him before. He taught at UVA from 1983 to 2011. He still lives in Charlottesville. And I know many of you have read his poems in anthologies and also in his books. Charles Wright is one of America's most distinguished poets. He's won most of the major awards, the Pulitzer Prize, the National Book Award, National Book Critics Circle Award, Bowling Green Prize, and others too. Several years ago, he was made the U.S. Poet Laureate. I've always wondered what makes a poet a poet. And it seems to me there's often an experience early on in a person's life that convinces that person to get off the main road and to take a side road that leads to poetry, the road less traveled, as Robert Frost called it. I think Charles Wright would agree that he took that side road to poetry when he was working in northern Italy a couple of years after he graduated from Davidson College. He actually took a road trip to a beautiful place, to Lake Garda, which is west of Verona, near the mountains. And he went to a ruined villa that supposedly belonged to the ancient Roman poet Catullus. Ezra Pound and Ernest Hemingway had also visited the lake, and Pound had written a poem about the area that described it as a paradise. I've never been there, but a few days ago I did a Google search, and it does look like a paradise. It was during his trip to Lake Garda that Charles Wright had a visit from the Muse. He once wrote an account of the experience, and I thought I'd read it to you because it's written so beautifully, and it's indicative of the sort of beautiful writing that would come. Charles Wright said about this spring day by the lake in the ruined village, "The late March sun was pouring through the olive trees, reflecting off their silver and quicksilver turns in the lake wind. The lake itself stretched out below me and into the distance, the pre-Alps cloud shoulder and cloud shadow. The whole weight of history and literature suddenly dropping through the roof of my world in one of those epiphanic flashes that one is fortunate enough to have in one's lifetime, now and then if one is ready. I was ready." What I've always admired about Charles Wright's poetry is his visual and musical beauty, and the way he combines descriptions of the world's splendors with startling reflections on the world's history and mystery. I'm sure you'll notice some of that tonight when he reads his poems. So without further ado, let's give Charles Wright a very well warm.
I don't know if you'll hear any of that stuff tonight, because that's all landscape. And most of my poems are all landscape, which is fine by me, but they're not very audience friendly, I don't think. And so I can't get away from it, but I tried to find some poems that have other things in them other than the olive leaves. Although they are really nice, I'll tell you that. Anyhow, I'll see what we got here. Very happy to be in Williamsburg again. Henry told me it was 25 years since I was last here. Okay, this poem is called Ars Poetica. You know, it means the art of poetry. It starts out, "I like it back here." And back here is behind my house in California, in the back of the garage where they cut out a little hole, and that was where I had no windows or anything. That's where I tried to write. The first four poems I'm going to read are California poems, a place I left in 1983, so you'll know that they're not very recent, but they still vibrate with life. You'll see that. I like it back here, under the green swatch of the pepper tree and the aloe vera. I like it because the wind strips down the leaves without a word. I like it because the wind repeats itself, and the leaves do. I like it because I'm better here than I am there, surrounded by fetishes and figures of speech, dog's tooth and whale's tooth, my father's shoe, the dead weight of winter, the inarticulation of joy. The spirits are everywhere. Once I have them called down from the sky and spinning and dancing in the palm of my hand, what will it satisfy? I still have the voices rising out of the ground, the fallen star my blood feeds, this business I waste my heart on. And nothing stops that until you get to be 75 and then it stops. I live in a town called Laguna Beach in Orange County. I guess they had the wives of Laguna Beach or something like that on television, didn't they? The real wives of... This is called Looking West from Laguna Beach at Night. You're a tough luck. I've always liked the view from my mother-in-law's house at night. Oil rigs off Long Beach, like floating lanterns out in the smog dark Pacific. Stars in the eucalyptus, lights of airplanes arriving from Asia, and town lights littered like broken glass around the bay and back up the hill. In summer, dance music is borne up on the sea winds from the hotel's beach deck far below. Twist and shout, or begin the begin. It's nice to think that somewhere someone is having a good time, and pleasant to picture them down there turned out, tipsy and full, in their white shorts and their turquoise shirts. Later, I like to sit and look up at the mythic history of Western civilization, pinpricked and clued through the zodiac. I'd like to be able to name them, say what's what and how who got where, curry the physics of metamorphosis and its endgame, but I spent my life knowing nothing. This is called Laguna Blues. It's Saturday afternoon at the edge of the world. White pages lift in the wind and fall. Dust threads cut loose in the heart float up and fall. Something's off key in my mind. Whatever it is, it bothers me all the time. It's hot and the wind blows on what I've had to say. I'm dancing a little dance. The crows pick up a thermal that angles away from the sea. I'm singing a little song. Whatever it is, it bothers me all the time. It's Saturday afternoon and the crows glide down, black pages that lift and fall. The castor beans and the pepper plant trundle their weary heads. Something's off key and unkind. Whatever it is, it bothers me all the time. This poem, of course, is called California Dreaming, and it's the last poem I wrote before I left California, I think. It was a song, of course, by the Mamas and the Papas in the 1960s, and it was very popular. We are not born yet, and everything's crystal under our feet. We are not brethren. We are not underlings. We are another nation, living by voices that you will never hear, caught in the net of splendor of time to come on the earth. We shine in our distant chambers. We are golden. Midsummer and Darvon dustfall off the Pacific stuns us to ecstasy. October sun stuck like a tack on the eastern drift of the sky. The idea of God on the other, body by body, rinsed in the Sunday prayer light, draining away into the undercoating and the slow sparks of the west, which is our solitude and our joy. That was supposed to be mid-morning, not midsummer, because you find out what time it is as this goes on. I've looked at this ridge of lights for 6 years now and still don't like it. strung out like Good Friday along a cliff that easters down to the ocean, a dark wing with ruffled feathers as far out as Catalina, fallen from some sky, ruffled and laid back by the wind, Santa Ana that lifts its hot breath on the neck of everything. What if indeed the soul is outside the body? A little rainfall of light moistening our every step, prismatic, apotheosisic. What if inside the body another shape is waiting to come out? White as a quilt, loose as a fever and sways in the easy tides there. What other anagogue in this life but the self? What other ladder to paradise but the smooth handholds of the ribcage? High in the palm tree, the orioles twitter and grieve. We twitter and glee. The spider twirls the honeybee, who twitters and grieves around in her net, then draws it by one leg up to the fishbone fern leaves inside the pepper tree, swaddled in silk, and turns it again and again until it is shining. Some nights when the rock and roll band next door has quit playing, and the last helicopters swamp back to the Marine base, and the dark lets all its weight down to within a half inch of the ground, I sit outside in the gold lame of the moon as the town sleeps and the country sleeps like flung confetti around me. I wonder just what in the hell I'm doing out here, so many thousands of miles away from what I know best. What I know best has nothing to do with Point Conception and Avalon and the long erasure of ocean out there where the landscape ends. What I know best is a little thing. It sits on the far side of the simile, the like that's like the like. Today is sweet stuff on the tongue. The question of how we should live our lives in this world will find no answer from us this morning. Sun flick, the ocean humping its back beneath us, shivering out wave after wave we fall from and cut through in a white scar of healed waters. Our wetsuits gloss slick as seals, our boards grown sharp as cries. We rise and fall like the sun. Ghost of the Muse and her dog's body suspended above the beach, November 25th, sun like a Valium disc, smog like rust in the trees. White-hooded and friar-backed, a gull choir eyeballs the wave reach. Invisibly pistoned, the sea keeps it up, plunges and draws back, yesterday hung like a porcelain cup behind the eyes. Sonorous vowels, insistent extremities, the worm creeping out of the heart. Who are these people we pretend to be, untouched by the setting sun? They stand less stiffly than we do and handsomer, first on the left foot, then the right. Just for a moment we see ourselves inside them, peering out. Then they go their own way and we go ours, back to the window seat above the driveway, Christmas lights in the pepper tree, black Madonna gazing out from the Alianthus, chalk eyes downcast, heavy with weeping and bitterness. Her time has come round again. Piece by small piece, the world falls away from us like spores from a milkweed pod. And everything we have known and everyone we have known is taken away by the wind to forgetfulness. Somebody always humming, California Dreaming. This is a poem called Relics. There was an Italian writer by the name of Aldo Buzzi who wrote a book called Journey to the Land of the Flies about Sicily. It's a marvelous book if you ever get a chance to read it. I steal a line from here from him. And also use his name. But he wrote this poem, actually, come to think of it. It's called Relics. After a time, Hoss, it makes such little difference what anyone writes. Relics, it seems, of the thing are always stronger than the thing itself. Palimpsest and Pentimento, for instance. Saints' bones or saints' blood, transcendent architecture of what was possible, say, once upon a time. The dogwoods bloom, the pink ones and the white ones, in blots and splotches across the dusk, like clouds perhaps, mock clouds in a mock heaven, the faint odor of something unworldly or otherworldly lingering in the darkness, and not as though some saint had passed by the side yard. The odor of paradise, as Aldo Luzzi has it. Odor of heaven, the faithful say. And what is this odor like? Someone who smelled it was asked once. He had no answer and said, it doesn't resemble any flower or any bloom or spice on this earth. I wouldn't know how to describe it. Lingering as the dark comes on. Saint Gasperi del Bufalo was one of these fragrant saints, Bootsy continues. Saint Gasperi, who walked in the rain without an umbrella and still stayed dry. Miraculous gift. He knew, he added, one of the saint's relatives, a pianist who served him in Osso Buco once in a penthouse in Milan. Let's see, a cold spring in Charlottesville, end of April 2000. If you can't say what you've got to say in three lines, better change your style. Nobody's born redeemed. Nobody's moonlight golden fuse in the deadly trees. White wind through black wires, humming a speech we do not speak. Listen for us in the dark hours. Listen for us in our need. The port referred to in this poem is called Cicada Blue. It's Federico Garcia Lorca, the Spanish poet, who's everybody's favorite Spanish poet. He said, I love you green. I say, I love you blue. What can you do? I wonder what Spanish poets would say about this. Bloodless, mid-August meridian, afternoon like a sucked-out, transparent insect shell, diffused and tough to the touch. Something about a labial, probably. Something about the blue. St. John of the Cross, say, or St. Teresa of Avila, or even St. Thomas Aquinas, who said, according to some, all I have written seems like straw compared to what I have seen and what has been revealed to me. Not Spanish, but close enough. Something about the blue. Blue, I love you, blue, one of them said once in a different color, the edged and endless expanse of nowhere and nothingness, hemmed as a handkerchief from here. Cicada shell of hard light just under it, blue. I love you, blue. We tried to press God in our hearts the way we'd press a leaf in a book. Afternoon memory now, sepia into brown. Night coming on with his white snails and his ghost of the Spanish poet, port of shadows and death. Let's press him firm in our hearts, oh blue. I love you, blue. This is called the Appalachian Book of the Dead 4, which presupposes 1-3, and actually, past supposes 5 and 6. But this is number 4. There's a quote here from a country song called Let's All Go Down to the River. And I first heard it by Mack Wiseman back in the late 1940s. I never forgot it. High-fiving in Charlottesville, sunset heaped up as close to us as a barrel fire. Let's all go down to the river. There's a man there that's walking on the water on the slow red Rivanna. He can make the lame walk, he can make the dumb talk and open up the eyes of the blind. That dry shot over the water walk. Harbor him in your mind's eye. Snub him snug to your hearts. They'll have to sing louder than that. They'll have to dig deeper into the ear bone for this one to get across. They'll have to whisper a lot about the radiant body. Murmur of river run, murmur of women's voices, raised up without rhyme, the murmur of women's voices. Good luck was all we could think to say. Dogwood electrified and lit from within by April afternoon late light. This is a lesson for today. Narrative, narrative, narrative. Tomorrow the sun comes back. Tomorrow the tailings and slush piles will turn to gold when everyone's down at the river. The muscadines will bring forth the mountain laurel and jack in heaven when everyone's down at the river. And have no fear, these are all short. This is called Sentences 2. I can't remember what Sentences 1 was, but I know it's there somewhere in the back part of my wallet. Last chapter, last verse. Everything's brown now in the golden fields. The threshing floor of the past is past. The overmountain men of the future lie cusped in their little boxes. The sun backs down over the ridgeline at 7:05. The landscape puts on its black mask and settles into its sleeplessness. The fish will transpose it, half for themselves, half for the water 10,000 miles away at the end of the darkening stream. To live a pure life, to live a true life, is to live the life of an insect. I mean, that is a good thing. This is called Heaven's Eel. A slight wrinkle on the pond. A small wind. A small wind in the rumpled cloud reflection. Ho-hum. What's needed is something under the pond's skin, something we can't see that controls all the things that we do see, something long and slithery, something we can't begin to comprehend, a future we're all engendered for. Sharp teeth, Lord, some sharp teeth. Heaven's eel long and slick, full moon gone with nothing in its place. A doe is nibbling away at the long stalks of the natural world across the creek. It's good to be here. It's good to be where the world's quiescent and reminiscent. No wind blows from the far sky. Beware of prosperity, friend, and seek affection. The eel's world is not your world, but will be soon enough. I got to a point where I said, I've got to write about something instead of just vamping on what I look at. Of course, I look at these things too. Not Heaven's Eel, but toadstools I look at. And this is called toadstools. The toadstools are starting to come up, circular and dry. Nothing will touch them. Gophers or chipmunks, wasps or swallows. They grow in the twilight like rooted will-o'-the-wisps. Nothing will touch them. As though little roundabouts from the bunched unburiable powers, dominions, as though orphans rode herd in the short grass, as though they had heard the call, they will always be with us, transcenders of the world. Someone will try to stick his beak into their otherworldly styrofoam. Someone may try to taste it forever. For some it's a refuge, for some a shady place to fall down. Grief is a floating barge boat, but who knows where it's going to moor. This is called Shadow and Smoke. You're going to be sorry the good stuff is just starting. Live your life as though you were already dead, Che Guevara declared. That's what they say, but it sounds like a 2,000-year-old Japanese koan to me, but I don't know. Che Guevara is supposed to have said it. Live your life as though you are already dead, Che Guevara declared. Okay, let's see how that works. Not much difference as far as I can see. The earth, the same paradise it's always wanted to be. Heaven as far away as before. The clouds the same old movable gates since time began. There is no circle. There is no cinema to be broken. There are only the songs of young men and the songs of old men hoping for something elsewise. Disabuse them in their ignorance, Lord. Tell them the shadows are already gone, the smoke already cleared. Tell them that light is never a metaphor. This is called Grace 2. I actually happen to remember Grace 1. It was about a place in the tall grass where a deer had spent the night and all the grasses were flattened out. I don't know what it meant, and I don't know what I said, but what can I tell you? Grace 2. It's true, the aspirations of youth burn down to char strips with the years. Tonight, only memories are my company and my grace. How nice if they could outlive us. but they can't or won't. No Indian summer for us. It's rough and it's growing dark. The sunset pulling the full moon up by its long fingernails. It's better this way. The unforgiven are pure, as are the unremembered. Nothing to say about this. It's called Road Warriors. My traveling clothes light up the noon. I've been on my way for a long time back to the past, the irreconcilable city. Everyone wants to join me, it seems, and I'll let them. Roadside flowers drive me to distraction. Dragonflies hover like lapis lazuli, there, just out of reach. Narrow road, wide road, all of us on it, unhappy, unsettled, 7 yards short of immortality, mortality and a yard short of not long to live. Better to sit down in the tall grass and watch the clouds, to lift our faces up to the sky, considering for most of us, our lives have been one constant mistake. This is called I'm Going to Take a Trip in That Old Gospel Ship, which is an old country hymn. The Hunter Gracchus is quoted by Franz Kafka. W.Z. Zabel, Max Zabel, wrote a story about the ship on which the Hunter Gracchus was being carried around the world, coming to light on Lake Garda. Pretty interesting story, you should read. Did the great ship with the beer of the Hunter Gracchus pass by this year? Or is it just late? Did it finally find the seam, the crack between this world and the other, and slip through sails furled, and drifts now as it was meant to drift on pure, unpestilent waters, still circling the globe and out of its cage forever? Hard to know, George, hard to know. It's left behind still vibrant, its wake still ripply in the evening sun. So difficult to belay the myth, so difficult to hold hard to the transmutation of narrative and imagination. The real world has its hand and feet in the other one, though its head's here and its heart is here. The clouds, as they always do, present us the option. Dig down, brother, dig down deep, or keep on walking fast. This poem is called Everything Passes, But Is It Time? And has a quotation from something that Jerry Mulligan, the great bass saxophone player, once said. Sunset same color as maple tree in my neighbor's yard. Nature in nature headbutt, golden persimmon. And if the stairs to paradise are that color, who wouldn't put his old Reeboks down? Gently, however, oh so gently. The membrane of metaphor is weak and has no second step. Don't play too long, don't play too loud, and don't play the melody. Nature's deft to this beautiful injunction. And that's okay once you live one's life as an acolyte, walking into the temple, oblivious, the heavens exploding around you, your heart conflicted, your footfall sure. Time is your enemy, time in its fail-safe disgrace. Open your arms, boys. Take off your shirts. This one's called Just a Closer Walk with Thee, which of course is a hymn. But not too close, man, just not too close. Between the divine and the divine lies a lavish shadow. Do we avoid it or stand in it? Do we gather the darkness around us or do we let it slide by? Better to take it into our hearts. Better to let us have it. Better to let us be what we should be. Tonight, the sexual energy of the evergreens removes us from any such attitude, at least for a momentary intake. Then it's back in its natural self between the it and the it. The fly that won't leave the corpse will end up in the grave. This is called With Horace Sitting on the Platform, Waiting for the Robert E. Lee. 70 years and what's left? Or better still, what's gone before? A couple of lines, a day or two out in the cold? And all those books, those half-baked books, Sweet Yeast for the Yellow Dust. What say, Orazio? Like you, I'm sane and live at the edge of things. Countryside flooded with light. Sundown, the chaos of future mornings just over the ridge, but not here yet. You will have, if you've been listening very intently, you will realize that my titles had nothing to do with the planets. I thought that was cool at one time, and so I just kept on doing it. This one, unfortunately, does have to do with the poem. It's an elegy for my brother-in-law, Tim McIntyre, who died at the age of 42. The funniest guy I ever knew, and also one of the most talented. He was an actor, a musician, and did voice. He just did everything. He was also an alcoholic and a cocaine addict, which eventually killed him. This starts out up in Montana, where we were when this started happening. Luke is my son. Front porch of the first cabin with Luke. July, most likely, and damp, both of us wearing rubber boots. Just out of the photograph, behind the toe of my left foot, the railing where Tim and I, one afternoon, carved our poor initials while working on verses for his song, Stockman's Bar Again, Boys. Both singer and song are gone now, and the railing too. We all sang in the chorus back in L.A. in the recording studio, Holly and I and Bill Myers and Kelly and Johnny Rubenstein. Such joyful music so long ago before the coke crash and the whiskey blows. Sun-soured Montana daydreams. Los Angeles and its dark snood, so soft on the neck. Lie still. I'm working on it. Lie still. Billy Mitchell's just come by and somebody stole his tools. Leland Driggs has shot an elk and broke the county's rules. Sweet Dan Kelly's on his cat, watch out and back away. Snuffy Bruns is feeding squirrels and crashes Buck and Hank. Big John Phelan's got outside a half a fifth of gin. We've all gone and gotten drunk. The Stockman's Bar again. Dead frequency slick, over and out. It's mostly a matter of what kind of noise you make. American Hot Wax, for instance. And Stand By Your Man, George Jones, typecasting for sure. And music, always music, keyboard and guitar, violin, anything with a string. Your band was called Fun Zone. You up front, Poncho on drums, Wolfie on bass, and Johnny R. at the piano. And others, until the lights went out. Renaissance boy, with coke up your nose and marijuana in your eye. We loved you the best we could, but nobody loved you enough except Miss Whiskey. You roll in your sweet baby's arms now, as once you said you would, and lay your body down in your meadow, in the mountains all by long. This I can't help reading. It's a little sentimental poem about my hometown of Kingsport, Tennessee, where I grew up. It's called Arrivederci Kingsport. It's got a bunch of names in here of people whom you don't know, but you know people just like them from your junior high and high school days. It's all interstate anymore, this Edgefields Ted, Glenn, and I would shoot doves on, or underwater. The country music highway out of the hollers and backwash to southeastern Kentucky. Old U.S. 23 has carried the boys to a different demarcation. Their voices like field mice in the 21st century wind. Goodbye to that stuff. The late 40s and early 50s and adolescence. Dolores Urquiza and Clara Hall. Memories, music just out of tune. Drifting in their 7th grade frocks across the civic auditorium floor. Goodbye to Sundays and band practice. The back seats of cars. Goodbye to WKET and everybody's song. Jesus, it's all still a fist of mist that keeps on cleaning my clock. Tick-tock, my youth. Tick-tock, my youth. Everything going away again and again toward the light. Who will remember Christina Mosh and Bobby Stepp now that I'm gone? Who will remember the frog famine now that the endless roads have carried us all from town? Midsummer in 1951. the sensor gone, the call and response both gone. How far away is that? A life unremarkable, one which is remarked, it turns out, without consolation, it seemed. Adolescence, the summer seeped to its end, the sweet smoke of the past like bandages on all our imagined wounds. And once upon a time, in the long afternoons of autumn, the boys and girls would lay them down in the bitter weeds and watch the hidden meanderings, the stars in their luminous disguise, that ill-invested bloom. Is there a reprieve for this act? Is there a reprieve for such regard? Not in this life, and not in the next. Well, yes, but beside the point. And what is the point? The point is the drawn-out landfall from Chestnut Ridge to Moccasin Gap. The point is US 11W disappearing in front of us and behind our backs, the winter winds and the clouds that dog our footsteps, out west and back east. And so the dance continues. Boots Duke and Jackie Emery, Bevo and Kay Churchill, Jim Churchill and Nancy Sims, name after name dropping into the dark waters the day before yesterday, Champ Batchelder and Karen Bell, Bill Ring and Sarah Lou, slow dance, the music coming up again. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Da-da-da-da-da. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. The soft air Tennessee night gathers its children in its cupped hands. Time has its covenant, who's to say it is unjust? We make our sad arrangements. The sky clears, the sun sets. No matter the words, we never forget our own song. That good night, sweetheart thing was always played at the end of every dance when I was a child. I'm from Appalachia, as you can gather. This is called Appalachian Farewell. Kingsport was the queen city of Appalachia, which will tell you how many kind of cities they had in Appalachia. Sunset in Appalachia, bituminous bulwark against the western sky drop. An advent of golden greens, an Easter of ashes. If night is our last address, this is the place we moved from. Backs on fire, our futures hard-edged and sure to arrive. These are the towns our lives abandoned, wind in our faces, the idea of incident like a box beside us on the trailway seat. And where were we headed for? The country of narrative, that dark territory that spells out our stories and sentences, which gives them an end and a beginning. Goddess of bad roads and inclement weather, take down our names. Remember us in the drip and thaw of the wintry mix. Remember us when the light cools. Help us never to get above our raising. Help us to hold hard to what was there. Orbank and Reedy Creek, Sigonzo down the line. I always love that word, Sigonzo. It's a little town outside of Kingsport. If you've never been there, don't bother. You go through like that. But it's great. It's great. It's a great name, you know? Sigonzo. I wonder who Sigonzo was. This is called College Days, and I read it only because we're in a college. Okay? And you might have had some of the same aperçus as I did. This is Davidson College in North Carolina, about 20 miles outside of Charlotte. And Mooresville, North Carolina, is about 8 miles from Davidson. When I was at Davidson, 53 to 57, you could not drink on campus. You had to be at least a mile away from campus before you could have a drink, a beer. And so we always went to Mooresville hotels, you know. College days. Mooresville, North Carolina, September 1953. Hearts made of stone, doodly wop, will never break. Should have paid more attention, doodly wop, to the words and not just the music. Stone Streets Cafe, the beginning of what might be loosely called my life of learning, a post-adolescent heartbreak without borders. All I remember now is 4 years of Pabst Blue Ribbon, a novel or two, and the myth of Dylan Thomas. American Lay-By, the academic chapel and parking lot. Oh yes, and my laundry number, 597. What does it say about me that what I recall best is the laundry number, that only reality endures? Hardly. Still, it's lovely to hope so, that speculation looms like an ever-approaching event darkly on the horizon and bids us take shelter, though like Kafafi's barbarians does not arrive. That's wishful thinking, Miguel, but proper, I guess, to small rooms in early morning hours where juke joints and clean clothes come in as the second best. Is sin, as I once said, more tactile than a tree? Some things move in and dig down, whether you want them to or not. Like pieces of small glass, your body subsumes them when you are young. They exit transformed and easy-edged many years later, in middle age, when you least expect them, and shine like Lot's redemption. College is like this, a vast, exact window of stained glass that shatters without sound as you pass, year after year disappearing unnoticed and breaking off. Gone, you think, when you are gone. Thank God. But look again, already the glass is under your skin. Already the journey is on. There is some sadness involved, but not much. Nostalgia too, but not much. Those years are the landscape of their own occasion, nothing lost. It turns out the solemn sentences metabolize into the truth and tacky placemats we lay out when custom demands it. That world becomes its own image, for better or worse, the raven calls, the weed-eater drones, and has no objective correlative to muscle it down. It floats in the ether of its own content, whose grass we lie on, listening to nothing, to his pale half-brother, the nothingness. I wonder about my speech. Oh, bedtime story. Oh, there's the phrase Dongenzeit in here, in German. In Kingsport, we used to call it ding and such. And then we learned better. Or some of us did. They probably still say it in Kingsport, ding and such. The generator hums like a distant Dongenzeit. It's early evening and time, like the dog it is hungry for food. And we'll be fed, don't doubt it. We'll be fed, my small one. The forest begins to gather its silences in. The meadow regroups and hunkers down for its cleft feet. Someone is wringing the rag of sunlight inexorably out and hanging. Something is making the reeds bend and cover their heads. Something is licking the shadows up, is stringing the blank spaces along, filling them in. Something's inching its way into our hearts, scratching its blue nails against the walls there. Should we let it in? Should we greet it as it deserves, hands on our ears, mouths open? Or should we bring it a chair to sit on and offer it meat? Should we turn on the radio? Should we clap our hands and dance the something dance, the welcoming something dance? I think we should, love. I think we should. This one's called Time Will. It understands that I'm not speaking well tonight and is trying to bite me. This is called Time Will Tell. Time was when time was not, in the world an uncut lawn ready for sizing. We looked and took the job in hand. Birds burst from our fingers, cities appeared, and small towns in the interim. We loved them all. In distant countries, tides nibble our 2 feet on pebbly shores with their soft teeth and languorous tongues. Words formed and flew from our fingers. We listened and loved them all. Now finitude looms like antimatter, not this and not that, and everywhere like a presence one bumps into, oblivious, unwittingly. And excuse me, I beg your pardon, but time has no pardon to beg, and no excuses. The wind in the meadow grasses, the wind through the rocks, bends and breaks whatever it touches. It's never the same wind in the same spot, but it's still the wind. It blows in its one direction, northwest to southeast, an ointment upon the skin, a little saliva, time with its murderous gums and pale, windowless throat, its mouth pressed to our mouths, pushing the breath in, pulling it out. Well, I've got to read Ducks, because it's another one of my thing poems that I wrote one summer in Montana. Gasoline smell on my hands, perfume from the generator's toothless mouth, opening swallow from the green hose, sweet odor from the actual word, world. There's an old Buddhist saying I think I read one time, before enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. The ducks who neither chop nor carry understand this, as I never will. Their little feet propelling them under the water, serene and stabilized from the far side of the pond back to the marsh grasses and cat's tails. I watch them every night they're there. Serenitas. I watch them. Acceptance of what supports you, acceptance of what's above your body, invisible carry and chop. Dark understory of desire where we should live, not in the thrashing dust-tipped branches. Desire is anonymous, motoring hard, and swaying in the unseeable. Lullaby. I said what I had to say, as melodiously as it was given to me. I said what I had to say as far down as I could go. I've been everywhere I wanted to but Jerusalem, which doesn't exist. So I guess it's time to depart, time to go, time to meet those you've never met, time to say goodnight. Grant us silence, grant us no reply, grant us shadows and their cohorts still across the sky. Thank you very much for putting up with me. Hey, come on. Wait till you hear me next time. If you're ever so unlucky as to hear me next time.
Does anyone have a question? We can also go out for the reception and the book sale, the book signing. But if anybody has a question, I think you have to shout because the ventilation system is working now.
I've been reading through Half-Life lately, and I was just wondering if you have any advice or words on process as to how you move quotations that you love into drafts of your poems. Do you let it happen organically?
Do I write a what?
When you're putting quotations from other people into your own poetry, do you always let it happen organically, or are you sometimes searching for the words and then find them and insert them?
Geez, I don't know. I just I see something nice, I steal it and stick it in my poem.
Yeah, but to hold on to it for a long time, do you steal it and keep it in your notebook and then use it later?
No, I don't do it in my notebook. Okay. I don't have a notebook. I don't have a desk to write on, I don't have a chair, I don't have anything, you know. But I don't have a notebook, and I correct as I go along.
Yeah.
I don't write drafts. I used to when I was younger, and I said, well, that's silly, I'm just going to erase it and go on. So, if anyone ever wanted to see what I did before the final thing, they'd never find it because it's all already.
Yeah, I know. I was looking through your papers at Emory and I couldn't find them.
What are they doing at Emory?
They just have a few of your drafts from books. So.
I'll be damned. They called me up. Now, Emory's a great place to have for your papers to be. Emory and the University of Texas. They called me up exactly a year after I'd given my papers to UVA, which I'm glad I did. But Emory had a bunch of money, you know.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? And I think, what's his name? Young.
Kevin.
Kevin Young got a couple of things somehow.
He did. He got a couple of things.
He's a smart dude. Anyhow, so I don't know what to say. I'd like to say it arises organically.
Sure.
Particularly the things about the Hunter Gracchus, which I've used over and over again, because I'm up in Montana in the summer and I always think about it coming around. And once I read that story by Zabel, it made a lot of sense to me. It made a lot of sense to my nonsense. That's what it did. Okay. That, oh, yeah.
Maybe more a comment, but I've stumbled too. But I really don't think the 10 words you mixed up diminished the value of the thousand or so you work together.
Well, you're fine. If you're my student, you'd get an A. Thank you for saying that. I never do that. You know, I'm really pretty good about speaking, enunciating quite clearly. Unless, of course, I'm drunk, but I'm never drunk when I read, so I don't know what to say. But thank you.
You can set your expectations high if you want. You can set your expectations, like, infinitely high, but...
Well, it's just that I... Every damn poem, I kept missing a word, It's all right. The great mistiness out there. Hmm? Yeah. I don't like to think of them as nature walks, but I write out of what I see. I'm not a very inventive poet, as you will have figured out. And so I have to look at stuff and write it down, you know. And then I try to jazz it up a little bit, of course. And but I don't know how I got into landscape. Landscape has always been so important to me, and I think it started when I was in East Tennessee and grew up in East Tennessee, and I kept seeing it there. And then I was in Italy, and it just overwhelmed me, landscape, and I kept trying to get it right, you know, to say what I thought about it. And then, as always, what's always behind everything I write, unfortunately, I was raised in Episcopalian and was a dead-on guy till the age of 16, and that always has stayed with me. And I don't know what to say. You know, these are the sorts of things where you say, don't anybody ask me any questions about my poems because I don't know how to explain them. I don't even know how they were written, you know, basically. But as I always say, my soundbite is landscape, language, and the idea of God. And the idea of God keeps coming through all this stuff. And language I get very caught up in, and it's become a subject matter for a while, as is landscape. So I don't usually go out in the woods anymore because I'm too scared. But I never took a nature walk. What do you mean? I used to hang out in the woods a lot. Yeah, it's true.
Why don't we take a walk out to the reception and the book signing? And thanks again for coming, and thank you, Charles Wright.